Welcome to Positive Personal Power with hope, aspiration, and encouragement. Our goal is to build and enhance people's confidence and strength to handle life's challenges. Now, let me introduce you to your host, Nathaniel Skula.
Well, welcome. I am very privileged to be joined by Dr. Danielle Einstein, who is a clinical psychologist and an author and researcher as well. And welcome, Danielle. And Nadia, I won't forget to introduce you this time. Nadia Russo is the founder of Alter New Media, and she's actually co-hosting this. So we should hopefully have a really interesting conversation. And I know, Danielle, that you're involved with a lot of research around managing one's state of mind despite huge change and uncertainty at the moment. And you're nationally respected in Australia for your work and internationally, I imagine, in the psychology field, right?
That's right.
Super.
Thank you.
Super. So I've got a few questions. I know you're currently focusing on bringing awareness to your program, COVID-19, Chilled and Considerate. And this really sort of ties quite nicely in with how can we be more resilient in life?
That's right. That's an area that I've been working in throughout my whole career, trying to get messages to students and teachers and the general public about how we should manage uncertainty. Because even before coronavirus, we knew that people who don't manage uncertainty well are more likely to have psychological problems. And in fact, they even have more psychological problems going together than people who feel that they're not afraid of uncertainty. So and when we're facing uncertainty in an area that's important to us, which might be, for example, at the moment, it's our health. Health is important to everybody, and finances, there are like our basic needs. And once those are in question, then obviously everyone is gripped now with having to deal with uncertainty, and they're experiencing the consequences, which leads to anxiety. And I think, Nate, that actually most people don't really understand how to handle worry in a way that helps them and in a way that is in general going to reduce their anxiety levels and help them manage anxiety so they actually feel stronger rather than being overwhelmed by all the different sorts of emotions that can go when we get trapped in handling it in a way that's actually not that healthy.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult. I mean, are there any sort of specific techniques that you kind of recommend to balance one's mind?
Yeah, there's a lot, and we need to really have them based in understanding how uncertainty affects us, because if we can face it in understanding, then we're going to put the right techniques in place as we encounter our little uncertainty bombs. So I like to think about these little uncertainty bombs that explode in our mind, and some people are good at diffusing them, other people, they just keep detonating, and those people are walking around just feeling that tension in their body most of the time. And so we can think about the fact that our mind does this to us, and it produces these little what if bombs, like at the moment, you know, what if I get coronavirus, or what if someone I love gets it? What if I give it to somebody I love? What if I can't get another job after this? What if I can't pay the rent? The more we worry, the more we're actually going to worry. Worry is actually a cycle that feeds on itself. And that's why one of the skills that's really important is actually recognizing the worry. What is this little uncertainty bomb? What is it? Is it a what if worry, or is it a why thought? So these uncertainty bombs are thoughts, and we're talking about anxious thoughts that we have that pop into our mind, and we can think of them and categorize them into three different types. So what if, why, and what do I do now? And then we've got to take different approaches depending on which of those thoughts is the one that's in our head at the moment. So that's part of the process of understanding how uncertainty can derail us, and knowing that we need to handle our thoughts in a specific way. And that way is actually different to the way that we handle our feelings.
What do you think, Nadia?
Well, you specifically work with younger people, and your program is really targeting youth. Do you notice a real distinction between how younger people cope with uncertainty and how older people do in the way that these uncertainty bombs manifest?
So actually, interestingly enough, Nadia, I'm trying to target the whole population. And the reason why we've got programs for students in schools is because I figured, well, students obviously, well, actually, if we can target it in students and we can prevent this worry cycle taking over and learning bad habits of how to handle worry, then that could be preventative for developing anxiety and depression and other mental health issues later. So one of the reasons for targeting students is that prevention aspect.
Right.
And students experience a lot of relief when they get this information because now they know how to manage their thoughts and right. their feelings, and they've got a way of doing it. But the other reason for targeting students is because we actually now have a program for parents which can be delivered online in a very simple way. And so I want the messages also to get to parents so that parents know what to say and how to manage their own anxious thoughts. And of course, these messages apply to absolutely everybody. So it's just that either we fall into these bad habits and we've never, actually a lot of this material is new. So people just don't know it. They just don't know how to handle thoughts. And unfortunately, sometimes the news and rumor and social media feeds that whole collective uncertainty and actually leads to a lot of negative emotions and negativity. And of course, it's normal to feel negative right now, but we need to then take on how to handle it ourselves if we're going to feel better. If we rely on other people to manage the way we feel by, for example, getting reassurance every time I have a little uncertainty bomb or looking to my leader to answer the uncertainty, whereas my leader can come up with policies, and those policies are useful because they will help me know what to do when I'm dealing with a what do I do now thought, right? Because right. they've thought about the risk and the cost.
Right.
And they're giving us principles as a community to be able to move forward in a safe way. But yeah. on the level of handling our own feelings, we need to work it out for ourselves and respond to, like I said, those different anxious thoughts in their own way and take it on and not be scared of the uncertainty in order to actually really properly be able to manage ourselves and lead to less problems.
For sure.
Wow. But being up and down though is part of being human though, right?
Absolutely. Having feelings. And that's what I meant about having a different approach to our feelings than our thoughts. So we need to let ourselves have the feelings and not try to rush out of them.
Right. So sometimes do you think feelings can kind of drive us to take action? Like, I mean, I know I've done the best work that I've done in terms of self-development work and learning new skills when I'm stressed out of my mind. Yeah. Because it's like that. I'm just like, well, what am I going to do? Like, okay, I'm going to do this. And I go and just learn something new. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the steps we have in our program is once you've learnt to diffuse your uncertainty bomb and you've recognised it and you've gone through the steps of what to do, then you can distract yourself, and you can distract yourself in a powerful way. And you need to understand for yourself, what are those powerful ways? So is it a powerful way that produces a bit of dopamine in your mind or serotonin or a bit of oxytocin? What is it that, or is it a powerful way, like for instance, watching hours and hours of Netflix, which for a short period of time might be fine, but if that's what you're doing every day, you're not going to be getting those boosts of serotonin, and you're not going to end up, like, you're just not doing anything that is adding to your sense of achievement. So we just need to look at the way that we cope. What is it, the action that we're driven to right now while so many people are in lockdown and doing social distancing and we've lost some of the ways that we used to cope? What are the patterns that you have fallen into or your family has fallen into? And can we give you the language and the means to shift that pattern so that you lift your mood?
Right.
That makes sense.
That makes sense, yeah.
We're talking about like the distinction between individual uncertainty and collective uncertainty. Obviously it's really reflexive. I mean, one feeds back into the other. But in your observation, what do you find, how do you find it kind of balloons into this full-blown collective uncertainty? Like, how does that happen?
Well, so people have those little what if uncertainty bombs, those what if thoughts. And because they don't like those thoughts, because when we're facing uncertainty, when we have a what if thought, we automatically think the worst. On some level, deep down, we think the worst thing's going to happen. So we think, well, I'm not going to get another job. Even though logically we know it's actually too early to make that decision. I have to wait for this to unfold and I will know at some point in time, but it's not yet. The person has the feeling that goes with it is part of that, the sense of, I guess, being pessimistic and just being, there's this part that weighs us down when it's uncertainty and we have that little uncertainty bomb. So we want to get away from that really quickly and we don't want to actually really think about it. And so we air it. We say to our family or we put it on social media in the form of, oh, can you believe this has happened? And what if I can't? You know, you say to your family, what if there's not enough money to pay for staff? Then the problem is that a lot of people will engage in a conversation about this what if thing happening, right? So, and if the conversation, so there's different ways that we can have that conversation. The media likes to pick a whole lot of what ifs that aren't even on the horizon and make a big story about those what ifs, right? Which obviously, if you're then looking to have your what ifs substantiated and looking for other people that are unhappy so that you can all sort of panic together, then it drives this collective uncertainty. And instead of actually using a little bit of let me get help from someone who's sensible and who understands what's happening so I can think it through, and actually using the steps that I'm sort of talking about to think it through for myself so I actually can get to some sort of resolution for now, as much of a resolution I can get to for now, people are using collective uncertainty to stay worked up and stay tense. And they're not taking it on. We know with anxiety, one of the really, really important things in anxiety that so many people haven't been able to crack is the fact that when you get anxious, you seek reassurance. You look for someone else to tell you that it's going to be okay. But the fact is, with uncertainty, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know for sure. No one, you know, my teacher can't tell me that I'm going to get 90% in the exam. You know, the doctor can't tell me for sure that I'm not going to get coronavirus because the doctor doesn't know, my teacher doesn't know. So, but funnily enough, we feel pressure as a doctor or a teacher to say, you know what, it is going to be okay. It's all right. It's okay. So I would suggest that this approach of saying publicly, it's all okay, denies the fact that there actually really is uncertainty. And that just keeps the cycle going, because if we don't accept uncertainty for what it is, and, you know, interestingly, Nate, uncertainty in positive areas is interesting. Like uncertainty in the news, and that's not positive, but just uncertainty is interesting when you think about now people being trapped and they can't do their full variety of activities. Life gets very boring, right? We lose excitement, and no wonder people are feeling down because they haven't, you know, it's Groundhog Day. Every day is very similar. We've lost that sense of being able to get a shot because we didn't know what was going to happen. So one of the things that I am really focused on in our program is changing people's reactions to uncertainty. I want people to be okay with the fact that they might have some uncertainty and that they might have some what if thoughts. And then I want people to learn how to manage those what if thoughts in a very clear way so that they're not as frightened by them and so that they know how to manage them so they can then distract themselves, if that makes sense. So yeah, there's two problems here, that individual reaction to uncertainty and then this sense of reassurance, which is, like I said, is a lifelong problem for psychologists. Like I know when someone comes to see me that they will get better from anxiety when they stop getting reassurance from others and when they take the messages on themselves and they learn to beat their fear by themselves, not because someone's done it for them. And that's what we're trying to, that's what we need to tip the balance on.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's very interesting what you're saying about like creating hormones and stuff like from doing activities. Yeah. Like, I mean, when I'm stressed, like I go for a walk or I like do some Tai Chi or like I might read the Bible or I might do something, I might meditate or I might, you know, there are loads of these different things. Yeah. that people do. And I suppose it's just working out what works for you, right? I mean, that's how I handle things. And alcohol is another problem, because that can make it worse. Yeah. Like, you know, we can have a drink, right? But like, alcohol sales in England went up 40% over this period. Yeah. I was probably guilty of some of that. Yeah. But then the next day you don't feel very well. And then the day after that, you feel not depressed, but you feel low again. Yeah. Because it helped you forget where you were. And then you ended up in this sort of place where you felt even more uncertain, perhaps.
Well, things haven't changed, right? So you're still facing the same uncertainty. And in that case, you actually haven't done anything that's made you feel better about yourself. So, you know, one of the reasons, I guess, Tai Chi and some of the things that you're doing makes you feel better is because you're building on yourself. And so that's why you're getting that sense of achievement, or you're calming yourself, but in a way that's really lasting and that you hold into. And it's a way that you soothe yourself that makes you feel grounded and good. And you know that that's what you need, that's what you need right now.
I don't know. It just gives me an excuse to eat more food, really. I'm not going to lie. But no, I've got a good one, right? I actually did a LinkedIn poll, because I know Nadia's got some questions. She's itching to ask you, right? But like, I did this LinkedIn poll, and I was really excited because it was my first LinkedIn poll that I'd done, right? And I basically said, I don't know why, I just decided I wanted to get to know a bit more about my audience, yeah? And it's all very stressful at the moment. So I posted this poll, and I basically said, we all worry about the future at times during our lives, and of course now probably more than ever. So I put my first LinkedIn poll together to gain insight into the content I'm creating for my community. And I wondered if you could tell me about your current mood so I can do better. Okay. And I said, so the question is, how are you feeling? Right. That was the question. Yeah. And I had four answers. You got four answers is all they give you. Worried, hopeful, confident, or excited. Okay. And at that time, because we all change throughout the day, I think at different times during the day, but at that time of the day, I was like, I'm not worried. I'm not excited, and I'm not confident. I'm hopeful. Yeah. So I posted this, and then I've had about 107 responses so far, 110. I only did it yesterday. And Marina, she said, I feel any one of those depending on the day and time. She put an image like this with a woman with her hands in the air. Right now, I feel a mix of all four. Yeah. And I kind of resonate with that, really, to be honest. You know, I know people say you can't be happy and sad at the same time, but I think right now, like, the brain is doing all sorts of crazy things.
Well, I think that takes us back to this message about positive uncertainty, which is what I'm really saying with that is that uncertainty makes life interesting. So there was a study done actually in the US with college students where some women were shown the Facebook profile. Some women's Facebook profile was shown to some men, and they were told that these were really attractive men. And one group of women was told that these men were definitely into them. And the other group of women were told that these men might be into them, but they might not be. We're not going to tell you. So, Nate, which group of women do you think were more excited and interested?
The ones where they didn't know for sure.
That's right. That's right. It creates intrigue. It's the reason we watch a movie. It's the reason, you know, we don't want to know the end of the movie while we're watching it. And the same with reading a book. When you think about it, sort of random acts of kindness, that's what makes them nice. It's because they're random. We're not expecting them, and that gives them the extra boost. So, right. So right now, where in history is making itself for everybody, this is a really major, you know, people have not experienced a pandemic in their lifetime and even in their parents' lifetime. It's no wonder that we feel a bit excited, a bit worried, a bit, you know, that we have that, you know, some people are really connecting with their family and they're feeling some real satisfaction and they're experiencing things that they haven't experienced before. Other people are seeing that their friends or family are connecting and are able to bond, and yet they're completely stressed out by their own workloads, and they're not able to disengage, and they're jealous or envious of what other people are going. And so those people will then be feeling down, because we also see in the research that when you experience envy, and envy is a really normal thing that most of us will get all the time in areas that are in, like, that we're also shooting for, that we're aiming for. So envy is nothing to be embarrassed about. It's just that when you experience envy, then you are likely to also feel down. And that's what's linked to depression when people are using social media. So that's a bit of research that came out a couple of years ago, and it has really threaded quite strongly through that social media research when we look at what are some of the negative impacts of social media on mental health. And so we all kind of need to learn also the other skill is how to recognize and manage envy in a healthy way, which is actually quite simple. It's just about acknowledging it rather than dumbing it down, just being able to acknowledge it and laugh at it and realize that actually you might need to reassess what you're aiming for. Now, I'm probably going too deep onto a topic here, so I'll stop that right now. No,
I don't think so. I was just looking at my buddy Ed earlier, right?
Yeah.
He lives in the Turks and Caicos Islands, yeah. And he was on his windsurfer, and he had his second daughter, and he picked her up, and she was on the side of the board and on the front of the board. And I was looking at this, and I was like, that's pretty cool, yeah. And I love Ed to bits. He's one of my oldest kung fu training partners. Yeah, he's fantastic, like a brother to me. Yeah, And I looked at this and I was like, wow, that is pretty cool. And there was a sort of subconscious bit of envy there, but it wasn't a kind of, oh, what a BS, you know, I'm not going to swear, but like, you know, yeah. But I kind of looked at him and I was like, that's very cool. I can't windsurf and I don't live in the Caribbean. But you know what? Everyone has their problems, right? Everyone has their problems in life. And he might have problems that I would be completely overwhelmed with, because it's just what we do, right?
That's exactly.
Nadia has problems with me. I mean,
that's I think that's really right. That's really interesting, Nate, because that is one of the things we talk to students about, recognizing that we don't know the whole person's life and that they would have problems. But you would have been more derailed by that image, Nate, if you actually had always wanted to live in the Caribbean and you
never have.
It. But if you couldn't afford it and you didn't, you know, like if you felt that what you're doing now is not what you truly want to do, and secretly you had this ambition to be there or to be able to sail with your son or whatever it is, then that would have upset you even more. So it has to be something that you actually really, really wanted for yourself.
Got it.
And family values is a big one, right? So if your family is not going through a great time right now, but you can see in social media that other people's families are, you know, they're playing board games, they're having meals, they're not all sitting on their phones all the time, they're actually connecting.
Yeah.
Then you might be much more rattled and feel much worse about your own situation. And that can lead to you then feeling a bit depressed and down, which is really understandable.
But then we only see the good points, right? They don't share the tantrums with their kids screaming in their ears when they've had a few too many beers the night before or something. Just imagine that headache. Yeah. Like,
That's the thing, and that's a conversation that we have a lot when we're talking about social media marketing. And obviously when I'm like working with clients and helping them build their brands, is the idea of authenticity in social media. And, you know, how do you exactly, are you authentic? And it's just, in some ways it feels a little bit like an oxymoron. Like, how can I be authentic in something that there's still going to be a level of contrivance to what you're doing by virtue of it not happening in the here and now, by developing a caption, by creating a photo. But as long as you're in touch with that and still, you know, do your due diligence to just be who you are, or at least show as much of who you are as possible and not, you know, try to create this veil. Yeah. I think that that's perfectly acceptable. And that leads me to another question, Danielle, is that, you know, obviously the internet and social media and just culture in general, there's a level of control that is kind of at play here. And I think especially in America, you know, people are really they want to control everything. Every micro interaction should be controlled. If it doesn't go the way you expect it to, then it either needs to be revised or just canceled out. And now, I mean, I'm not going to get into the political craziness that's happening in the country right now, but I will say it's really interesting to observe how much people not only are very fixated on controlling themselves, but on others. And I would like to know, in your opinion, how much does this fixation on control contribute to issues of uncertainty?
It's massive, Nadia. You've picked on one of the core reasons for me doing this work over the years. And it's because, like I said, when we look in the psychology research, we can see that people that are open to uncertainty and that are happy to be a bit less controlling and less prepared are actually the people who have less psychological problems and who worry less. They're also people, it's also shown that they're a bit less impulsive when they're dealing with problems. And we see that if you can change that need for control, then you see a reduction in the tendency to worry. And you also see if you can change that need for control, you see an improvement in social anxiety. You have to change that need for control and that what we talk about as dislike of uncertainty. I don't like uncertainty. I don't want it. And when you think about how phones and technology has influenced it, it's quite interesting because when I was at school, for example, many years ago, there were no phones and we didn't have computers at school. So if I had a doubt or a question, I couldn't text someone to ask it. I couldn't post it. I couldn't get an immediate answer. If I didn't know what to wear, I couldn't send a photo or ask my mum what to wear. I just had to live with the uncertainty and make a decision for myself. Right. And what I think has happened is with phones being just so easy and the ability to ask a question or look up Google being easy, we've actually lost that fundamental ability to sit with uncertainty and to have less control and less reassurance and less input from other people. And what we see in the psychological literature is that actually once you lose that, people who are using, for example, their phones to get control or their phones to distract themselves from uncertainty all the time, those are the people that 1 month later are more addicted to their phones. Mm-hmm. And so if you think about the way that our society, I think that people are often making money out of people's dislike of uncertainty. Can you think of any careers or any industries that you think really work on that, Nadia or Nate?
Loads. Well,
which ones?
Well, like coaching. Like coaching is just like rife.
You so much disdain.
No.
So I do
and I don't, yeah. Like there are certain types of coaches that I do dislike their style. I dislike their preying upon the weak, yeah. It is a disgrace.
Opportunistic
yeah?
type. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But so if you're amplifying someone's fear or amplifying their insecurities and saying you're not good at this,
yeah,
rather than just giving them the skills are useful. So I think we need to be careful when we put down coaching because to learn new skills is a really useful way to be able to manage yourself and do better in a situation. But to recognize if someone is making you feel inadequate, especially in a way that's not just and reasonable, well, then I think maybe that's what you're touching on, but I'm not sure.
Nat. Yeah, I mean, I think, Nat and I see this all the time because we're very immersed in like the online world, mm-hmm. that there are a lot of charlatans, unfortunately, in the space where there are legitimate coaches who are well-intentioned, who've done the work, who understand all of the nuances. And then there are those that kind of just give themselves this label and then seek out people that, you know, are even more vulnerable and insecure as they are and prey upon them.
Yeah.
And they're selling reassurance, right?
Right.
That's what they're doing.
And
so is the mainstream media in America. So
right.
That's but, right. But not, it just needs to be distinguished from giving skills. If the person is learning skills and taking them on, then it's beneficial.
That's the whole point. I mean, I've got a friend who's Britain's leading hypnotist. Yeah. He's written like loads of books. He used to be on the stage. He's actually convinced the people who stood up that they were eating apples and they were eating raw onions. And I think him and his wife, they actually peeled these onions. They were crying. Yeah. And he has an absolute disdain for hypnotherapists. Hypnotherapists, he completely dislikes, because they, not all of them, but a lot of them, they will get you in through the door and then they just see you as a cash cow every month, every week. Oh, yeah, you come back next week and we'll go over this problem. Excuse me. But he can literally cure someone of a problem, like, not everybody, but within 5 minutes. They can walk into his office, he can stop them smoking, he could, you know, lots of different things, and they're completely cured. Yeah, whereas a hypnotherapist, it could take them 2 years to help these people get over their problems. So I completely agree that people need to know the tools. They need to have the tools themselves. Yeah.
Totally. And that's what we're doing here. So our program, I'm going to talk about it for a second, really does give people both the understanding that they need and then the tools to do it. And if we're talking about, for example, parents, of which you don't actually have to be a parent to do this program, but what it's composed of is we've got 65 minutes of videos, including 7 people that have been through the program to understand the concepts and to put them in place and talk about their experiences during COVID. And then we've got 2 meditations, we've got 7 activities, and they're in a downloadable journal for parents to work through, so that they're actually doing their own work themselves and thinking about it and answering questions that are going to take them on the right journey to be able to work out how to manage uncertainty well, both in terms of what Nadia was saying, in terms of being able to understand when they don't like to let go of control and to be able to think about how to change that, and also to be able to manage those little uncertainty bombs and know how to categorize those thoughts, those anxious thoughts they have, and then how to take a different approach depending on which type of anxious thought it is. And then to move into what we were talking about before, Nate, in terms of looking at and weighing up how they distract themselves in a way that's healthy, that's building them, and also just self-compassion and being nice to themselves in this moment, because people are under a lot of pressure and dealing with this uncertainty is really, really difficult. So I don't want to say it's easy. All I want to say is that I think it's time for people, rather than to feel as though there's nothing they can do, we've created this program to make it very deliverable, to make it something you can do, to make it something that you can share with your partner so that they do it as well, so that everyone's on the same page, so that the kids, if they're doing the program through their school, and we want schools to do it, we've kept it really low cost for schools, so that teachers tell us when they do it that they're learning new things, even though they're well-being teachers. They haven't come across this information before. It's new. It's interesting. Right. It keeps them engaged, and we're getting just the most amazing, powerful results from students. We had a student at the King's School last week who's in year 9, so that he now knows what to do when he has a little what-if bomb that goes off in his mind during the day, and he's got a different thing that he does when he's going to sleep at night to calm himself with one of the meditations. And then he's now feeling calmer and more able to manage himself, to provide himself with that reassurance that we're talking about. So I think what I'm aiming to do through this project is to reach everybody, whether you're a parent, whether you're a student, whether you're a teacher, and to change what Nadia was talking about, both your individual response to uncertainty and manage your head, okay, and then also manage the feelings. And it's a different approach to feelings that we talk about and explain, which people really, really love. And it helps them know how to respond to feelings when they see them in their children as well, which is obviously really important at the moment, when we're so stuck in close proximity, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So all that close proximity leads to all these little arguments and sometimes really big arguments, and we need to understand in ourselves what's been set off and how to manage that as a parent, to know that we're doing the best we can with our kids. And it's hard. It's really difficult. But with the right approach, it definitely helps parents know sort of and feel comfortable with what they're doing and then be understanding of themselves. Wow. So we want to teach those individual skills, and then that will change the nature of discussions at home. And that will change, the more people that learn about this, the more it's going to change the collective uncertainty and those collective what if uncertainty bombs going out. I want people to stop looking for reassurance and instead be able to give themselves the right messages that are going to make them feel better. And I want them coming out of this without feeling that they can't handle uncertainty and that uncertainty is something that scars them and they need control all the time. Instead, I want them to learn that actually uncertainty is okay, because even after the coronavirus, we have to manage uncertainty all the time. We manage it when we go to a new job. We manage it when we've got a boss at a job who's not very nice to us, right? We manage it when we're meeting new people. We manage uncertainty. Like, you know, we'll have health risks come up in our life. There are things that are always going to happen. And if you feel that you know how to handle uncertainty, that's going to be, and we can see it in the research, it's a core factor in resilience. And we also know that society is doing our best to undermine that building of resilience by things like apps on our iPhone and by, you know, businesses or people that want to provide that reassurance and sell us the message that they will answer our worry for us and that we don't need to know how to answer it for ourselves. Also,
all of this additional technology and all of these other things have really kind of squandered our innate ability to be flexible and responsive to change.
Yeah,
and I think through the program, as people start to see their individual transformation, we're going to see potentially a real collective and societal transformation as well. So it's just fantastic what you're doing.
Yeah, thank you. I think it's great. I'm excited about the future. I'm more excited about the future than I was a month ago, because I can see the progress of you know, kind of the lockdowns being taken away. But you know, there are a lot of crazy things going on right now.
But then again, you're also in the UK, and Danielle, you're in Australia. Here in the US, I mean, all of everything that's going on has been incredibly distracting. So I really had to tap in my own self-resilience and self-discipline to find ways to tune it out while not completely omitting it, because I have to know what's going on at the same time. So it's like having that balance.
Yeah. It's important if you're in business as well to be able to communicate with people. They want to know you're up to speed with what's going on, right? But it's completely crazy right now. Like I don't think anyone is like prepared for this, yeah? And it's just, I think you need to just remove yourself. That's what I do. I remove myself from the media for a few hours or a few days, if I can, a couple of days maybe. But it's very difficult. You know, these devices that we have are designed to hook you, right? I mean, it's and the endorphins that they're giving your brain are crazy. I mean, it's like a continual addiction, isn't it, that we're fighting against, really. You know,
I think just acknowledging
I was just going to say that I've removed my app. Sometimes I remove a Facebook app just to see, like, I'm just going to see how many times my finger goes for this. It's not even there, as a means of reminding myself that I am addicted to this.
Yeah. And yeah. I think that we're seeing that is also contributing to lower moods through this crisis as well, because, you know, having less time face-to-face socially, there's more time to lean on your phone to distract yourself. And then, as you're saying, Nate, all the different hits and dips that we get from that. And then, of course, when we're in a dip, when our mood dips, because what we wanted to find is not there, what do? We scroll on our phone to look for something else. So we're looking to lift our mood through our devices. And so we do need to really watch for what's happened on that front. Can I just make one other comment with regard to what you were talking about before, Nadia? I think there really is this balance of accepting that it's all right to be interested in the news. Like I said before, I call that, you know, it's interesting to see what's going on. There's an element of interest. Yeah. It's like I'm in a movie that's unfolding. So don't be scared of that. But at the same time, you don't want to flood yourself with all these what if stories. So you need to be able to sort of really distinguish between what's interesting new news that's coming in that you want to keep up with, which you can check less frequently, and what is a journalist who's really just talking about some outside chance of this happening, and then they've written a whole story about the outside chance, which is not something I should be paying attention to right now.
Yeah, I agree. I did a super interview with one of the most famous newsreaders in the UK. The guy covered the Berlin Wall, Alastair Stewart. Wow. Fantastic. I mean, I remember him covering the Berlin Wall when I was a kid. I was like 6 years old or something when it came down. And like, just the most incredible guy, yeah. Like, his Twitter feed's crazy, yeah. It's just, it's insane, really. It's but it's like, and we had a, he had a good old go at the media. He really did. He had a good old, you know, he really told them what's what. And at that point in time, we were interviewing, let me see, when we do these daily briefings, we had like the government standing there, and then the reporters were asking the questions, and then they asked the most stupid questions. They don't even listen to the answer. And then they changed that around. Now the general public asked the questions, and it's a much, much better daily briefing. They ask them to start with, and then the reporters get to ask afterwards. Yeah. And it's brilliant now, much better.
Yeah.
Wow.
So can you give people like a couple of tips if they're really sort of stressed and worried right now? If they, you know, obviously buy your program. Yeah, we know that. But like if they don't want to buy it, like what, you know, right now, what?
You've got to catch your thought, categorize it. If you know this, if you understand that, you can have that what if thought, and then you need to work through and think about whether it's likely to happen, when it's likely to happen. You need to do a little meditation to help calm yourself down with the uncertainty and be all right. And notice what's happening in your body, because usually we're so concerned with the thoughts and that terrible idea of what could happen that we forget that our body's actually reacting. And so that's really important to pay attention to. And then when you're dealing with more of a what can I do now thought, then you need to have, I talk about how at step two, you've got to seek advice and look up information to get help to think about what all the different options are to deal with this situation. Then at step three, you weigh up your pros and cons of which one is the better way to go, and then you choose something. But the real difference is at step two, you're getting ideas from other people. Step three, and to finish it off, you take on the lessons yourself and you make the decision for yourself. And that's the real difference between sharing a what if worry and just wanting to talk about all the problems all the time and air it, but not actually and get someone else to answer the problem for you, or try and look to someone else to just sort of also sort of validate your worry, but you're not actually doing anything about it. And you're not in that what do I do now situation. You've got to work out what you're going to do, put it in place, and then see, did it work or didn't it? If it didn't, then I've got to go through my little problem-solving flower again. But the really important difference is, like I said, at step two, you get advice. At step three, you take it all back on yourself and you make your own decision. You don't outsource your decision to someone else, except in the case of where we're sort of following really clear hygiene rules and things like that, where someone else has done that thinking for us. And that I have no problem with, because they're making decisions for, you know, the welfare of society as best, and once everyone does it, then that's going to minimize risk. And actually anxiety is all about sort of risk of danger and threat. So you know, the big lesson I want people to look at is, how do you reduce your tendency to reach out for reassurance? That's the thing to change in terms of us handling anxiety in a better way, where we grow, where we don't need to feel that anxiety is going to take over. Where your anxiety will get better if you learn to manage it yourself and you're not looking for other people to solve it for you. That's what makes anxiety grow. So it's really interesting. With depression, we know that the key is to sort of really try hard to stop avoidance. And with anxiety as well. And so that's the key. We're trying to stop avoidance. With depression, sorry, there are other things as well, but we're not talking about that now. I'll stop talking. I told you I could talk for hours.
Don't worry. No, that's really cool. I know you didn't want to go into depression this time, you know, but perhaps we can have a conversation about that another time, I'm sure. You know, it's life is tough right now. And I think it's just accepting the fact, yeah, that, you know, it's not always going to be like this. And, you know, I mean, I'm just lucky that this time around, with a situation like you know, a dire situation, that I can do things from anywhere in the world. Like, we're very lucky, us three, but the real sadness for me is the people who are really, they don't know what they're going to do and they're completely lost. But I think embracing change is like huge. Like, if an opportunity comes, just take it, right? Like, that's all I can say. Like, you know, I mean, I've been down to my last can of baked beans a few years ago and a couple of slices of bread and whatever. Right. And like, you get through it. You get through it. And those are the times that shape you for, and then you appreciate things. You appreciate people in life as well. And you know, I think that's when you start learning really about things. And about how to be really super grateful. That's kind of my attitude really.
Gratitude is so important, and self-awareness. And I think your program, Danielle, is really great at helping people with their self-awareness. And it's a big problem right now. People are not really aware. They don't want to be self-aware. And so they seek out external outlets for this sense of confirmation and validation. That's just going, you know, it's like drinking, having two drinks and then feeling good for a moment and then, you know, or a few hours.
That's right.
It's all.
But I've got this lovely bottle of white wine in the fridge.
It's at least lovely. You have it.
February. But I've got this ritual. I buy this amazing dish. This amazing food. And then I match it with this wine, and I don't drink the whole bottle. But like, I quite like occasionally it's nice, but I think, I used to be in the wine industry, right? So I know what a problem is. Versus,
absolutely.
You know, you need to
that goes back to self-awareness
and control. You know,
and enjoyment. You're enjoying that wine, and there's a point to sort of savoring. Not like you say, you know your limit, and you're.
Yeah.
But if you have a little bit and you're really enjoying it, but that's different to having it to block out your feelings and to block out those little uncertainty bombs. So that's what I mean about understanding why we do things and shaping them, especially in lockdown and in dealing. It's not lockdown for everyone. So just as we build up our new ways of coping and managing, we need to sort of take a little bit of time to think about which parts of ourselves we're building. And that's where just understanding that, and we use these circles to talk about which bit of your brain are you building right now? And are you doing a balance? Is that where you want to go? You know, I don't want to tell people where to go. I want to just give people the language and the science and the understanding so that they can make decisions for themselves. And that's why if you can just take 80 minutes to reflect on what you're doing and go through the exercises and activities, it'll give you the ability to make decisions for yourself that will lead to you being healthier and less dominated and just not engaging in things that make the whole thing worse. That's what it's about. Let's move everyone to being able to manage it in a way that's better for them, both right now and also in the long term as we sort of move forward. We're putting up a little bit of a competition and wanting people to label those uncertainty bombs and really end up being able to recognize as a community what's going on. So have a look at our website. It's got a long name. I'm sure Nate will put it up. But
drop it in there.
Okay, great. Feel free just even to follow our social media and join the conversation if you don't want to do the program. The more people we have aware of it, the better. This is like, I want to really try and inspire community change here.
Super. So what's it called, Danielle?
Well, so our website, like I said, a long name. It's www.covid19chilledandconsiderate.com. But also you can just look up my website. It's got a link to it. And my name's quite simple. It's Danielle Einstein, as in the scientist, which I had to keep that
actually,
name.
Actually, my grandfather, but my grandfather, him and my dad, they went and they had dinner at Einstein's house.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like there were about 100 people there, I think. So it wasn't just him going.
It wasn't like an intimate gathering.
No, it wasn't an intimate one-to-one with Einstein. But...
No. Well, people often laugh at my name and we can't trace a direct link, but we do come from Ulm. So that's as close as we get. There must be something somewhere.
Super cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, my theory is one of uncertainty rather than relativity. And I have written a theory on this. It is published, actually, the theory that this program is built around a theory that's published in the psychology literature. So, and people can get to that if they want. And it's written really for clinicians to help them teach their clients how to manage uncertainty, because this is an area, like I said, I've been interested in and researching and working with other leaders in this area for many, many years now.
Super.
So it's not, it comes from somewhere.
Super.
It's fabulous.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for all of your work.
Pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Positive Personal Power. Do subscribe via your favorite podcasting app and please leave us a 5-star review. Or sign up on our website, positivepersonalpower.net, for weekly emails and updates, and do share our episodes with your friends and on social media. Feel free to reach out anytime.